With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. You're listening to Jeremy Beck on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
That's right, and I'm filling in for Mike Ryan on The Mike Ryan Show. And let's look at a couple of news headlines. Now, we've all been talking about the Nord Stream pipeline's sabotage, but in more recent news, another leak discovered on Nord Stream pipelines. The Swedish Coast Guard has said that it has discovered a fourth leak on the Nord Stream gas pipelines, which were damaged earlier this week. Initially, it was believed that the pipelines at the bottom of the Baltic Sea were damaged in three locations, but Swedish Coast Guard spokesperson Jenny Larsson told the Svenska Dagbladet newspaper on Thursday that there were in fact four leaks in the undersea infrastructure. She said two of these four are in Sweden's exclusive economic zone, and she added that two others were in the Danish exclusive zone. So initially when I heard the news, I was thinking, yeah, it does seem like it's a deliberate act. But yeah, you never know. Maybe it was a earthquake or something, or an anchor that was dragged along the ocean floor accidentally and it might have ripped up the pipe. But now that there's four leaks, I think there's no doubt about it in anyone's mind now that this was deliberately intended. Sabotage, no accident. Those sorts of accidents, how could that happen? It's an act of warfare, if you ask me. Terrorism. And it's shocking that it's come to that. In another headline, no such thing as limited nuclear conflict, Russian ambassador. This is an article from RT, and it quotes Russian ambassador to the United States, Anatoly Antonov. And he said, it is safe to assume that any use of nuclear weapons could quickly lead to an escalation of a local or regional conflict into a global one. So I think that's a warning sign from Russia, and he made it very clear that Russia is not going to start it. He made it very clear that the threats are really coming from the United States, but Russia will not just back off and do nothing. If there is a conflict, they will do whatever they can to avoid it, but they are prepared to defend Russia with anything that it takes. And the point that the ambassador, Antonov, he said, is that don't think, America, you can just hide behind the Atlantic Ocean and think that the nuclear war would be just confined to Europe. This would extend all the way even into the Americas. It's a big warning, but Russia, I don't think they're bluffing, and we do need some real proper diplomacy, which we don't seem to have anything at all anywhere near what should be happening. All the leaders, whether it be from the G20 group or Russia and China and United States in particular, the leadership's layers should sit together and have a frank discussion so we can get out of this mess. Otherwise, we're in deep, deep trouble. At TNT Radio, we never go home. We're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7, online globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
The latest news, traffic, and weather right to your smart speaker.
I listen on Alexa.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Amidst the storm that's engulfing Europe and the United States and other Western countries, except many in Australia are not aware that it will soon be affected, there was some excitement about the election of Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, leader of the Brothers of Italy, a party of the centre-right. We're also going to explore the chilling and possible sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines. And I'd escalate that from possible to absolute certainty now that we know this latest news that the fourth leak, no coincidence, could be possibly like that other than a deliberate sabotage. I think that's more than clear now. Dr. Robert Brennan joins me today to discuss these issues. Dr. Brennan has taught anatomy and several other biomedical sciences for a decade or so before medical school and a career in psychiatry. Robert has been a regular commentator on TNT Radio. Welcome, Robert.
And hello, Jeremy. It's great to be with you again.
Yes, likewise. Now, in terms of this result in Italy, the Prime Minister, the new Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, you know, a lot of people are jumping up and down on the right side of politics and saying, oh, this is great. On the left, they say, oh, no, how terrible, a fascist. It's not quite as simple and dry cut as that, is it? If you look at her and you look at her background, she's actually quite an establishment figure when it comes down to it.
She is, yes. But just if we could preface our conversation with something. I mean, yes, I come from the medical faculty and you come from the engineering one, and yet we're talking geopolitics and Italian politics and all that sort of thing, which is, you know, it's kind of a wonderful thing in a sense because, you know, it shows how TNT is breaking down the barriers of the expert class. You know, you have to be some sort of professorial chair in Italian political science in order to say something. Oh, well, we'll have a shot at it because, you know, we're the voice and because we are the common man and woman. It's kind of ironic that that Giorgia Meloni runs a party called Fratelli d'Italia, the brothers of Italy, and she's a little sister. But that's right. I mean, like Americans going, the American left are going bananas and saying fascist, because she's identified as being on the right. When really it's from what I know of the Italian fascism and Mussolini, the Mussolinian formulation of fascism was a corporate government fusion. Or as we know it today, you know, the public-private partnership, the stakeholder capitalism. And so, you know, so from a psychiatric angle, there's this idea of, you know, projection. It's the thing that is uncomfortable within my character, I can't tolerate it or I don't want it to be seen as coming from me. So I'll throw it out as if it's from you. I'm the selfish one, so I'll say no, Jeremy's selfish, and look at this, look at why he's selfish. So it's the same thing with the left. It's like the contemporary Anglo world left is fascist, but that's what they accuse the other of being. It's incredible. It's and yes, as if to say that they just call her a fascist and they can shut her down and that's that.
Well, it's how you define fascism also, because a lot of people have in their mind fascists as someone who's just dictating and doesn't take no for an answer and you just do what you're told kind of thing. But there's a stricter definition of fascism in terms of corporatism, which is what Mussolini's model was, which in a sense is what we have in many Western countries anyway, where you have the big business, big multinationals, big banks that have essentially bought out government so that the government is not really truly democratic because the big business, big corporations own them and tell them what to do. That's what I see is what fascism really is. And it's dangerous because these corporations, when they control government, the government can do some very, very ugly things.
Yes, that's right. I mean, Mussolinian fascism is the way things are working in Australia, Canada, New Zealand, US, UK, and yes, but they can so easily deflect from that by just accusing the other, the right, for example, of being the fascist ones. Of course, sure, there's other formulations besides, you know, blood and soil and ethnic purity and things like that. You know, putting aside the arguments for ethnic purity or ethnic supremacy, just the idea of blood and soil and national sovereignty, that's something which ought not to be objectionable to the right, but that too, it's like if somebody says, I'm patriotic, it becomes something which is, they know that there's a sort of a sociometer at work where they'll be accused of being racist just for that, when really it's just a basic form of patriotism and an attachment to the soil that is the stuff that many a poor folk would have, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm. Yeah. And in this election result, many actually didn't go out and vote. Do you have a sense of why that would be?
Well, I had a little bit of a look of Italian politics. Man, it's a mess, more than a mess compared to Australian politics. You know that that stage when it seemed like every time, which was more Australian politics and Australian prime ministerships were run more from the ratings than from the ballot box, because when they started to get on the nose on the ratings, their own party would stab them in the back and then have another one come in. But what I notice is that, I mean, everything must be sort of couched within the fact that in the 90s, Italy becomes wedded to the EU and the euro, and that becomes something which is, you know, it becomes a status quo that is so concretized that, I mean, that has to be defended, and it has to be defended against the ideas of what the left would call fascist, but was really just ideas of national sovereignty and their own currency and sort of control of Italian people over Italian futures and fates and that. And so, immediately there's a conflict between one set of values and the Euro-communist state. And what I noticed is that you've got a sort of a more or less stability in the role of the president that's notionally meant to be just symbolic, but they actually have exercised some power against what's been, and there's been stability of presidents. I mean, there was Giorgio Napolitano, I think from 2006 to 2015, and then then there was Mattarella from 2015 up until this year. And yet there's been so many prime ministers. And these, with the exception of Berlusconi, who held power for a couple of terms for quite a long time. And so you've got Napolitano, who puts in place, uses his influence to put in place Monti in the early 2010s, who was a Europhilic technocrat. You have Mattarella, where when the right of Italy was thinking, oh, now we'll finally start to take on the European Union, and the five-star movement was voted in. Well, they put forward their proposed economics minister, and economics portfolio is important in terms of any sort of engagement with the EU from a future economic disengagement sense. But Paolo Savona, their man, who was Eurosceptic, so-called Eurosceptic, Mattarella vetoed him. Instead, you get in somebody who's insipid and sort of going to work with the union. So you can see how there's these tensions, and yet the Euro machine keeps winning by keeping the prime ministerships keep in a constant state of flux, where there's no one who ever really holds power for any more than a couple of years, where they control the shots of who gets it there. And then you have, in the run-up to this election, you have Ursula von der Leyen, the Brussels-born German president of the EU, who I might add is a doctor by training, so, you know, we're an evil bunch. she's asked at Princeton something like, you know, well, what happens if the Italian election goes right, to the right? And she says, well, we have tools. It's very interesting how the terminology of tools. It also coincides, that terminology, with what the World Health Organization is proposing in terms of their future universal pandemic management plan, where the World Health Organization can declare a pandemic, where the 194 member states cede their power, and basically the World Health Organization takes over across the world. They also talk about the use of tools, where tools are essentially policy instruments, and some of these, you know, they pack a punch if you're a civil libertarian or the like. So, yeah.
Definitely. And I did see that video, and I was thinking, you know, how could she how can she talk like that with such a smug look on her face? And then she had a real sort of a chuckle at the end. We have tools. it was quite sinister to watch. This Euro system is very, very dangerous for all European nations. It doesn't matter where you are in Europe. Once you've lost your currency and all the sovereignty goes out, you can't have monetary policy, they're in deep, deep trouble. Now, we do need to take a break. So I'd like to discuss that further in terms of the euro and the loss of sovereignty of all countries. But we'll take a quick break now and then we'll be right back. This is TNT Radio.
Politically incorrect on TNT Radio.
When do you think our governments started to become so corrupt? 30, 40 years ago? I get the impression it's been a process, unfortunately. A friend of mine used a comment the other day about too many of our politicians, WIIFM, what's in it for me? And that's a very sad reflection on the quality of the individual that we now have lording things over us. But do you have an idea when it might have started to be so hopeless?
The Commonwealth being able to make laws for Aboriginal people, which provided them with the mechanisms to distort history, which they have over a number of decades, in order to create this Native Title Act, which was designed by the UN, which Keating only consulted with five hand-selected failed leaders he trusted, in order to actually stop the progress of Australia by cutting off the opportunity to use all the land under subject to Native Title, which is a title that individuals cannot own, to stop Australia from exploiting its natural resources to our benefit. It's not for Aboriginal people. Definitely one of the key ways they're undermining the Australian nation is through Aboriginal people.
Weekends are better when you spend it with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
St. Joseph's Indian School is much more than a school for Native American children.
It's like a family. Ah! Classes are fun here.
I don't want to go.
Okay, good. Okay, we want to go.
I am learning about my culture. I feel safe and loved here. St. Joe's is more than a school for me.
Since 1927, St. Joseph's Indian School has been a safe haven for Native American children to receive the cultural heritage, education, health care, and caring support they need to succeed in life.
As a father, I feel very good about leaving my kids here. They have way more opportunities here.
Learn more at stjo.org today.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah, 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk, this is TNT Radio.
And this is Jeremy Beck, and my guest is Dr. Robert Brennan, regular on TNT. Now, before the break, I just mentioned about Europe and the loss of sovereignty with respect to the currencies, because when they went to the euro, any one nation really lost their ability for monetary policy because it's all under this one big euro block. What are your thoughts on that, Robert?
Well, yes, that's right, because everything's now run from Brussels because, you know, these are economic times. These are times when we're led not so much by, and in fact, there's been a systematic destruction of the idea of national identity and national and patriotism for one's nation. There's been let's put a charitable view upon immigration from multiple cultures, from multiple countries. Okay, let's say that's all very benevolent and all very necessary. That's great, but nonetheless, it creates a kind of a marble cake of different interests, different backgrounds, and it erodes that sense of national patriotism. Not necessarily in every case, because, of course, you know, some immigrants can be hyper-patriotic. They can arrive in a country and think, you know, this is a wonderful place. I really want to sink my teeth into it. But others, not so much. And the agitators can pit race against race, as can, you know, just the human condition. But this is the thing. You have an erosion from a multitude of sources, including the media, the Americanization of Europe to a certain extent, just as has happened in Australia. You get this erosion of national identity. You have, rightly or wrongly, you know, the German guilt. So you have the German problem, where they don't want to, you know, be what, I mean, what is it to be a German, and what does that mean? Does that mean that they're Nazis, blah, blah, blah? So there's that German guilt. So there's a further erosion. So what do you end up with? Well, you end up with all of this sort of this cultural decline, combined with economic interest, combined with other factors besides, you know, the shift towards globalism in general, where it's like, well, you just have different states within a nation that is Europe, rightly or wrongly. And of course, you know, there's also the problem of the Second World War, where I imagine in the psychology of Europe, some would be thinking that any call to national sovereignty is to risk what happened between 39 and 45. Once again, rightly or wrongly, that might be the concern. And so you end up getting, and in economic times, you end up just getting the euro symbolic of something else. And everything's run out of Brussels.
I think it's a flawed thinking that nationalism is the cause of wars, because World War II or World War I, it wasn't really nationalism per se, because you can have a sense of national pride and sovereignty and work with other nations without going to war. But there are certain vested interests who play one nation off against another, and they owe allegiance to no nation. You know, I see that as the bigger issue to wars rather than the natural patriotic you know, sense of a population, which I think is a healthy you know, reaction for a population to have some sort of pride in their nation and their culture and their history.
Yes, yeah, that's right. But also, just on a tangent, while we're talking about the euro, what I've found very interesting as a non-economist. Now, I understand that the weaker our currency, the greater the investment buy-in can be of foreigners. So, for example, if we're running a theme park or running a restaurant or something, that the weaker our currency, the more foreigners will decide, okay, well, we'll come on holiday in Australia, we'll go to that restaurant, we'll go to that theme park, or we'll buy that degree if we're a foreign student versus going to United States universities or wherever. I get that. So there's a certain sense in which there can be economic strength in having a weak currency. However, there's one thing that all of the developing world has in common, and that is they have terribly weak currencies. And there's one thing that all of the hyper-developed world have in common, and that's they have comparatively stronger currencies. And so when economists constantly say in Australia, well, this is a good thing that our currency is weakening, I think, well, that there's a reality to that. And that means that more of foreigners can buy us and we can't buy them. It means that our buying power overseas is far lower. It makes us weaker. And so it's just such an incredibly, you know, disgustingly sort of weak and, you know, obsequious call to the world. Come and buy us when we, like, what we're seeing now, we're buying 65 US cents, which is something where I remember back a decade and a half ago, that was a tragedy when it fell below 66 cents. But now it's 65. Nobody bats an eyelid. Euro, 66 euros. In fact, there's almost a parity now between the US and the euro, almost like they're one economic block, and it's revealing the hand of the US as the sort of the power behind things. Even Russia, they're at a five-year high. I mean, all these sanctions are so terribly damaging them that before all this mess, you know, about a couple of years ago, we could get 55 rubles to our dollar, and now we're getting 37, which is what we were getting at a peak several years ago if we were wanting to go to Thailand. But now we're down to we're from the mid 30s baht down to 24 baht. So Australians, they're systematically making you weaker. So you can't leave unless you're the rich, vax or no vax. You can't leave unless you're the rich. You can't buy out unless you're the rich. You can't invest in overseas unless you're the rich. You can't educate yourself overseas unless you're the rich. You're stuck here.
Well, that's very, very true. And the middle class has been wiped out under this globalist agenda. We are in deep trouble and we have to reverse that. But we're up to the news headlines in a second. This is TNT Radio.
Checking your TNT headlines, I'm Matt Boyland. A Herculean search and rescue effort is continuing across Florida after Hurricane Ian decimated parts of the state's southwest coast, smashing ashore just shy of a monster Category 5 storm on Wednesday. America's placed its energy operators on high alert after a series of explosions disabled Russia's Nord Stream gas pipelines in the Baltic Sea. And US President Joe Biden's been caught on camera looking for a dead congresswoman at an event at the White House.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Jeremy Beck back again, and my guest, Dr. Robert Brennan. Now, let's get back to the Italian election. Now, with this new Prime Minister, Meloni, the US media reaction has been almost hysterical. Our Australian
media. She's a fascist. Media. She's a fascist. They say fascist. Yes. And meanwhile, even our, I won't name names, but even our conservative side of politics and US conservative side of politics, what do they say? They don't say congratulations on the Italian's new PM. They say on first female. So, you know, if we were truly gender blind, and if the right and the conservatives, call them what you will, of the Anglo world were gender blind and wanted to go against that kind of identity politics, why wouldn't they just say congratulations on the next Italian PM? No, shit, there's got to be first female one. So even they have bought into that, which I imagine she would be quite offended by, because her rhetoric is such that she thinks, well, who cares? I'm a woman. You know, learn to live with it. She's sort of a second wave feminist in that sense. So yes. So what I noticed is that, and this is what brought her and Italy to my attention, was on the heels of her election victory, this video goes around amongst all of like our circles, which I took erroneously to be her acceptance speech or a recent speech, you know, and she says that she makes a joke at having just stopped from the ironing, you know, this sort of ironic sort of humour that she's not tied to the domestic duties of wifedom. And then she sort of lets loose and she says a number of things, including, you know, she goes out there with what would be considered now in our world homophobia. She says about how, why is it that the rights of heterosexual Italian parents are not supported, and yet there can be two men who can go abroad and buy a baby and get surrogates and all that sort of thing. So she says that. She ticks the box of the anti-euthanasia cause, in the sense that she says it's so easy to turn off the plug of someone on life support, but to keep them going, no, we can't do that. She says other things besides support of family. She takes on Soros. She says, you know, quote, this is what we're doing here today. Why is the family an enemy? Why is the family so frightening? There's a single answer to this. Because it defines us, because it's identity, because everything that defines us is now an enemy for those who would like us to have no identity and simply be perfect consumer slaves. And so they attack national identity, they attack a religious identity, they attack gender identity, I take family identity. Then she gets very interesting with saying, I can't define myself as an Italian, a Christian, a woman, a mother. No, I must be citizen X, gender X, parent one, parent two. I must be a number because when I'm a number, well, I no longer have an identity of roots and I'll be the perfect slave at the mercy of financial speculators. That's how they interpreted her Italian. The perfect consumer, that is the reason why, close quote. So that's just one segment. And so a lot of our circles are saying, wow, this is amazing. Yeah, this conservative woman. That speech comes from March 2019 at a family conference. No doubt the vast majority in the audience were conservative, Roman Catholics. It's the Roman Church in Italy. And so so maybe she was telling, maybe she was entirely sincere, but she was also telling the crowd what they wanted to hear. And we have to bear that in mind. Sincerity or not. And it harks back to March 2019, which is long before COVID and the impact that has had on geopolitics, and long before the Ukraine, and long before she's gotten into power too, or when she was going for the run. So, you know, and we have to couch that within the context that would put the rest of our talk, which is Italy is wedded to the euro, wedded to the EU, and the system stops at nothing to keeping that way. And so we can and you asked the question earlier, I mean, why did so many people didn't turn up? Well, the millions that didn't turn up this time equates with the loss in vote of the Five Star that didn't manage to deliver on sort of extricating themselves or being on the way to becoming the next, I don't know, it's not Brexit, it's what I exit, whatever the Italian equivalent is. So, you know, so, I mean, we've got to ask ourselves a question. Will the system's filter allow her to get to the top if she really is going to be a threat to them?
I don't think so. And it seems like the system, the establishment, backs all sides. And they always get a winner. They always get their way on the key policies that they have, the key objectives. Now, they might have to take a few, back steps in certain directions, but they'll keep marching forward in the general direction of a globalist agenda, economically, culturally, what have you, and they'll take a few hits. This speech that you mentioned, that 29 speech, I saw that too. And I thought, oh, great, you know, she ticks a lot of boxes there. And the more research I did into her, I saw that she was initially a supporter of the vaccination passports. And the thing that concerned me most is she was very happy to stick with NATO and send arms to Ukraine, which is really just sending us into, you know, continued World War III if we continue going down that path, isn't it?
Yes. Well, I mean, here's another quote from her. For example, the digital green pass. So there's all the horrors that go with the digital green pass, because it is something that, you know, geolocates you to where you are in terms of your movements past locations. We're the first to support it, she says, very proudly. We hope to get it adopted as soon as possible in total reciprocity with all European states. This is a priority and is fundamental to restart mostly tourism. I want to salute all medical professionals. As you know, the Fratelli d'Italia was in favour of the penal shield for doctors and for anyone administering the vaccine. So, you know, it would have been very possible if somebody wanted to take a very hard line against COVID to lobby for a national, homegrown response that was also draconian, but no, she embedded herself further into the EU via the Green Pass, and so, you know, that's a bit of a red flag. Similarly, we've got we've got her Eurosceptical comments that start to erode as we go into 2020 and beyond, and. And so with COVID, it's kind of like it makes you wonder whether that's just sort of one vehicle by which to cement Euro power. And then we've got Ukraine. Now, she was sort of halfway friendly to you know, to Russia and Putin and that sort of thing. But that's long gone. There's a tweet from her. Where is the tweet? I can bring it up. I'll have to find the tweet. But, oh, yes, okay. 28th of September, dear Zelensky, you know that you can count on our loyal support for the cause of freedom of Ukrainian people. Stay strong and keep your faith steadfast with the Italian flag and the Ukrainian flag. Once again, we have somebody who is, you know, who is part of the Euro machine. And
so is she really different from the previous prime minister?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's very hard to get in. It's impossible, in fact, to get inside the heads of these people. Is it the case that to pass through the filter, they have to make certain concessions, and sort of bend themselves to be able to fit in such a way where they're unrecognizable by the time they get through? Do they do that because they're Machiavellian and all they care about is power? Or do they do that because they wanted, because they realize that only through power can they get anything at all? You know, these are the same questions that were always put on Trump. Trump being a reality TV star, and what was he like? Was it WrestleMania? I can't remember which WrestleMania it is, but you know, there's a whole dynamic of wrestling as a drama where there's set up heroes, set up villains. They'll even switch sides. And so, was Trump even Trump, was he sincere to himself, to America? Was the system that wanting him through just making of the entire country just a giant WrestleMania episode for 4 years? Who knows?
Yeah, you have to get in the heads of people, don't you? And that's not possible. But you can just judge them by their statements and their actions, really. And I think Trump made some useful statements, but he certainly did not drain the swamp. Would have been nice if he did. But then again, I think what they've got now is far worse.
Yeah. Now, on the subject of the Aspen Institute.
Yeah,
it has
that's
a very,
very,
very
interesting.
Well, I don't know if she's currently part of it, but I work with someone who is high up in the executive world, and she had an opportunity to join the WEF as a young global leader, but she said no. Why? Because she knew what the WEF was. No. So the question is, why would a conservative join the Aspen Institute when the Aspen Institute started off with a name and a Christian conservative from a Roman Catholic country? Why would you join something that started off as a partly Goethe appreciation society, partly overtly humanistic group that is funded by, in large part, the Rockefellers, the Gates, you know, the globalists.
Mellon family.
Why would she do that? I mean, once again, is she just making compromises, or is she really part of the machine? Who knows? Mm.
Well, the Aspen Institute has been very influential for many, many decades, and they are really pushing essentially a radical international socialist system. They've been pushing the real green agenda, the deep green agenda of population control reduction, just about everything that the World Economic Forum is doing, essentially, you see in the Aspen Institute. Mm-hmm. So for her to be, a member of it, I don't know if she still is, for Maloney to be a member is a concern, even if she was for a short period.
Yeah, yeah. Just a few other points, I guess, we can make, and that, you know, apart from our suspicions about what she's really about and how far she'll go. I mean, she might well stop a few boats coming up from, from the African diaspora up through Libya. She might do some things that the left of Italy and elsewhere would consider homophobic, you know, some little token gestures of stopping surrogacy and the like for gay parents. But the fundamental objective is about keeping Italy under the control of Brussels and by extension under the control of Washington and the whole blancmange of the real machine behind it all, the WEF, the WHO, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, will she have the will or the power to challenge that?
Well, that's true. And you look at the globalist institutions, if you go back to the history, it really goes back to the old British Empire and then the American oligarchs around the Rockefeller family. And, of course, I mentioned the Mellon family before, which is, I understand the Mellon family is one of the biggest funders of the Aspen Institute in the early days. I'm not too sure about now, but the Mellon family were very influential, or still are, you know, banking family in the United States based in Pittsburgh. And these are the globalists. They're not the American patriots. They're the old British Empire that infiltrated the patriotic people in the United States to take them back away, because it was the patriotic people of the United States that wanted to break away from that oligarchy. And they essentially infiltrated all the institutions in New York. So now they're effectively one and the same. So here you have Maloney, who's joining their groupings. You sort of question, you know, how sincere is she? Anyway, we do need to take our final break. We'll be right back soon. This is TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Ian is a hurricane again. It was downgraded to a tropical storm for a while last night. It's moved back out over the water. And quite frankly, it's behaving according to what we outlined for you here on TNT. And remember, the track from the U.S. government sources was way to the west, staying over Florida and dying out a couple of days ago. I'm not criticizing them. I'm just saying that they have come to our path. It is a hurricane forecast to hit Charleston, South Carolina, about 2 o'clock tomorrow. That's U.S. time. It will be a significant storm. It won't be as bad as what's going on in Florida, not by a long shot, but still, for the Carolinas, a major impact item. And, of course, you have all these climate people saying what they're saying. Make no mistake about it, they're just weaponizing weather in a phony climate war. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Klaus Schwab has boasted of penetrating government cabinets around the world. He claimed in one interview that more than half of Justin Trudeau's Canadian cabinet are young global leaders of the World Economic Forum. If freedom prevails, the peoples of all nations will reject Klaus Schwab's fourth industrial revolution of surveillance and control and biotechnologies designed to change what it means to be human. We don't have to walk muzzled and compliant straight into a transhumanist hell. As Klaus Schwab himself admits, the new technologies of the fourth industrial revolution could intrude into the hitherto private space of our minds, reading our thoughts and influencing our behavior.
A cashless society means zero cash. No tipping the waiter or hairdresser. No giving to busking musicians. No selling unwanted items for cash. No buying anything with privacy. Digital currency means every cent you receive will be recorded and every transaction tracked. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
This is Jeremy Beck, and my guest is Dr. Robert Brennan. And we have been talking a fair bit about European politics, in particular the new Prime Minister in Italy, Giorgia Meloni. Now, in terms of where she is going to go, it will be interesting, because if she's tied into this European system, there's not much she can do. And how is she going to quell growing civil unrest in Italy as, you know, the gloss wears off?
Well, yes, and what will be the answer to civil unrest? Will it be some savior on a white horse with, you know? Well, actually, it'll be some sort of horseman of the apocalypse, but under the guise of a remedy, and that remedy will be what, strengthening a sort of a Euro-communist system, a universal basic income, you know, restore energy security, but the price of whatever, that which will inevitably involve something where there's a further march down towards the surveillance state, the social credit system state, all of this is the way that they work. I just wanted to point out something else about the recent Italian election and whether or not it's transferable to the Australian situation. We had our recent, Australian federal election, where we had, people saw it as this historic occasion to break the duopoly, to oust the major parties with these minor freedom parties, and these minor freedom parties popped up all around the place, and some electorates got, if you aggregate all the freedom party vote, 10%, some 15%, some higher. And if you consider that like in Italy, there was the informal vote and the voters that didn't turn out as protesting the status quo, they are in a sense that they would in a sense if they believed in the system they would be voting for the freedom parties, and so you're looking probably at over 20%, and yet what happened was of course because they were all divided, they. Because none of them were going to get the power outright and they didn't have any real formal coalition, they were doomed from the start. But so a lot of their membership is sort of like a rats, even lovable rats, we know many of them, sort of fleeing the sinking ship. Now it's like all of these parties have imploded. And yet this is where I'm going with this. The Brothers of Italy, the Fratelli d'Italia, they got in 2018 4.4% of the vote, and 4 years later that rocketed to 26%. So the lesson might be for Australians, that just to be a little bit more patient, to take the lessons that you've learned, and apply them, and don't go away, because next time round you might do better if you learn from the lessons and campaign differently.
Well, I think part of the election result that we had in Australia was based on ignorance in the population, because they were just following the mainstream media and they didn't know any better and they just continued their usual voting habits. But those who were informed, the preferences did help to some degree. In Victoria here, we did get Ralph Babbitt elected for the United Australia Party. He just got in, which is good news. At least we had one in the Senate here for Victoria. Considering that Melbourne was the most lockdown city in the world, I was thinking if we didn't get one Freedom Party candidate in the Senate, there'd be something wrong. Mm-hmm. But it was a disappointment, though, that we didn't get more. I think you're getting similar things happening in Europe. There's a lot of ignorance in the general population about what globalization really means, what the World Economic Forum agenda really means. There's some people who don't like little bits of it, and I'll pick and choose what they like and don't like, but they don't get the bigger picture. And I think that's one of the biggest problems that I've seen with people turning up to these major freedom marches. They just thought it was outrageous that you had to be forced to take a jab or lose your job, and they turned up to the march, but that was where it ended. And they didn't do further research to figure out all the other pieces of the jigsaw of what makes up this globalist system and what is really intended. And if we don't wake more people up, we're in deep trouble, because the political machine will keep marching on, and before we know it, we won't have the opportunity to take back our freedom.
Yes, and the question is, do the people have the il testicolo, the testicles? I'm just looking up the I don't know how to speak Italian, to cross the Rubicon and do what's necessary if they really feel that their democracy has been hijacked. Now, of course, we're not inciting violence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that's the fundamental question. I mean, when we consider the Nord Stream pipeline, there'd be many Americans, and we learn this lesson from the 9/11 situation. Putting aside the question of what was behind 9/11, whether it was in fact bin Laden and his crew or not, and exactly what happened, nonetheless, the reality is that a good fraction of Americans believe it was an inside job. they believe that their own government was behind it, just as they believe that their own government was behind the John F. Kennedy assassination, et cetera, et cetera. And yet the government knows that the people will take this belief and just do nothing, really. You know, maybe a protest here and there, maybe a conspiracy theory book here and there, but the government knows that they won't do anything. And it's the same with the Nord Stream situation. On governments on either side of the Atlantic, they know, whether it's Russia, whether it's US, they know that the people are going to say, oh, well, I'm not going to fight against that. Now, you can understand that they wouldn't want to fight against Putin, but that they wouldn't be up in arms, the Americans who believe that their own government did this, against their own government, that they wouldn't utilize their rights of the Constitution, et cetera, to say, no, this is an immediately an offense that which you should be brought to task, President Biden. Once again, this isn't commenting on what the truth of the matter. It's that if they believe that their own government did it, why are they so devitalized? That's the core problem in politics today.
And many people who would understand that 9/11 was an inside job, they feel powerless too. And there are a lot of actors, I would say, in intelligence agencies who'll muddy the waters with all sorts of fake conspiracies and get people confused and get people overwhelmed that the enemy's, the deep state is too powerful and you can't do anything. So all you've got to do is get involved in prepping. Mm-hmm. And there's a prepper movement for the coming doomsday or whatever. But that doesn't solve the core problem, does it? If we don't get back institutions that are going to be functional for future generations, there's only so many cans of baked beans that you can store. You know, you can't sit out decades like that. For what are your kids or grandkids going to do? We have to solve the problem and have functioning institutions that work for the people. How are we going to do that?
That's a big question, isn't it? But yes, I think people just need to first decide upon, have a good long look at themselves and decide, you know, what is their moment for which they will cross the Rubicon and what is that crossing, whether or not it's standing up for a principle and losing their job, or it's joining a protest march where if you have not 100,000, but if you have 1 million, join a protest march, that's going to deliver a signal or whatever. It's for them to decide, but certainly if they believe that their government is doing maleficent things, then, well, don't just take it. And if you believe that your democracy has been hijacked, then don't just take it.
Yeah. Well, no, non-compliance is really the answer for those people, because they can't put us all in jail if there are enough of us. Problem is, a lot of people fold. And I think the bigger problem is the general ignorance in the population. And that's where those of us who do know a lot of what's going on, we need to be very active in reaching out to others, not just talking to the converted, feeling good watching videos on Rumble or BitChute, but reach out to others as well. And spread the knowledge. And TNT Radio, we're able to give you all sorts of in-depth interviews from all sorts of experts, which you just simply won't get in the mainstream media. Use that knowledge and apply that and reach out to other people, pose some questions so we can get some change and so we can get better government in future, because the government right now has been totally hijacked. Now, in the remaining couple of minutes, did you have any other thoughts, Robert?
Only that, I mean, we'll never know the truth as far as Nord Stream is concerned. And even if somebody presented a camera of some sort of, demolition divers with a red star on them themselves, or with the red, white, and blue, we still wouldn't be able to believe what we see, because we will never know. But we do know the consequences. The consequences are it's making Russia even more demonized. It's making it's making the situation such that Russia couldn't turn on the tap again if it wanted to. If I think it was hoping to, because it wanted to get into a more powerful negotiating position as the Northern Hemisphere starts to get colder. It knows that it's being painted the victim as a villain rather. And so, okay, you could say, if I'm the villain, then who cares? I'll just go all out. But no, I'm speculating, of course, but I think it was the US. I think it was the US because I don't think Russia wanted to risk it. I don't think they wanted to destroy their ability to turn it on again. And they knew the way that the West would frame it.
Absolutely. I think that the US is the number one suspect. I mean, you only have to look at Victoria Nuland and Joe Biden's statements from earlier in the year, or I think it was several months ago at least. It's clear that they're the number one suspect. The other possibility is some agents out of British intelligence, British military operatives, or some other NATO-aligned country, perhaps. But, that shows that they're willing to deny Europeans gas and let them freeze in the winter. That shows a really malicious intent. They're the real terrorists, and we need to wake up the world so we can pull out of this crazy mess. Now, we've run out of time. It's great to have you on TNT Radio, Dr. Robert Brennan. We're coming up to the news in just a few seconds. Great to have your company.